Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon on what is another overcast and cloudy day here in Southwest Florida. Rain, go away. Come again some other day. I think we've had enough for a little while. But I guess all this gentle rain won't hurt a thing. We need to build up the water table a little bit. You've all heard about how we've complained about how dry it is here in Southwest Florida. Hey, what a day. What a day. We've got a lot to talk about today, and I by no means will be able to get to all of it, but it's a great day in America. I want to proclaim that right now. The stock market, as we speak, is up 213 points. Oil is down $4.59 a barrel. How much better day could it be than this, huh? There's going to be a chicken in every pot again here very, very soon. Now, oil's going down. That means gas prices will be plummeting soon. Yes, indeed. And since the market's up, you'll all have extra dividends to share. It's a wonderful, wonderful day in America for everybody in the neighborhood, I guess. And congratulations to Dennis Kucinich. Dennis, you the man. And I think most of you know exactly what I'm talking about Dennis Kucinich today. Dennis is... impeachment resolution mentioning that Mr. Junior Georgie Bush is being charged, he would like to charge him with war crimes. It was read into the official record anyway, and the House voted to refer it to the Judiciary Committee, and they will begin hearings. And although Mr. Cotton Candy Conyers has said there will be no action taken on it except for some hearings, here's the big thing about this. Here's the really big thing about this. The hearings will be televised. Yes, they'll be televised. You remember back when Watergate was on? Well, these hearings will be televised. And finally, maybe enough people will hear about the crimes and incompetence of this administration. That the public, at least, even if they so choose not to do a damn thing about it, at least they'll be informed better than they are now about the Bush administration. And we can thank Dennis Kucinich for that. There will be no impeachment, at least, but at least these hearings will be on TV. And I suspect even some Republicans will finally know the truth and know that all the days they've been listening to Mr. Limbaugh and Mr. Hannity and Mr. Mark Levin and Laura Ingraham and all the right-wing propaganda advocates, they will finally know that those people have been lying to them in spades, and they will finally hear some truth at these hearings. Now, of course, there'll be nothing done about it. The weak-kneed Democrats wouldn't have enough guts to go ahead with any sort of impeachment charges and all, but at least they'll be out there in the public. So get ready. We owe Dennis Kucinich big time today. Best news I've heard in a long time. Nothing will come of it officially, but at least unofficially, when this man leaves office, at least maybe most of the public will know what he is guilty of. And we will talk more about that today. We'll talk a lot about that today. And I see they actually overrode Junior Bush's veto of the Medicare program. Congratulations. Once again, the Democrats showed a little bit of spine and stuck together on this. Pretty good, I would say. And another big news article today. Did you see where this guy in Liechtenstein, one of the banker guys there, has loaded a bunch of information on CDs about American, notable Americans, it says, and Germans and Brits who have had illegal bank accounts in the banks over there, and he's blowing their cover, and he sent it to the IRS. Some of our billionaire, notable billionaires in this country, they say names are on this thing, and he's sending their secret bank account numbers to the IRS, and now their cover's going to be blown on this. One of the people named in it was Britt, a UBS banking executive. Guess who was also connected to UBS Bank? Phil Graham. Ah, would it do my heart good to see Phil Graham's name on that list? Well, I think so. Let me just tell it like it is. Yes, it would do me good to see his name on that list. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. Now, I don't often start off a program this way, but I'm going to today. I want to address some hate mail I got yesterday, and I don't know why yesterday, all of a sudden, I got three pieces of hate mail from folks on iTunes, and I don't understand that. I know our problem is, I know our show is on iTunes, but I'd like to go over this hate mail with you, and then I'll read the rest of the hate mail after I get done with this first one. But this first one, as I wrote back to the guy, is a beaut. It really is, and stick with me on this. It starts out, it says, Guy James, I just started listening to your show on iTunes. I find it humorous that you lament being grounded in reality on your website when you have nothing but stale conspiracy theories about the Bush administration to broadcast. How much money do you and you fellow liberal talk show host make? Now, let me interject here. How is that germane to what we say and do on this program? Does the money have something to do with truth? Now, obviously, with the right-wing brain, it does have something to do with the truth, because the highest paid of all the talk show hosts is the biggest liar and the biggest prevaricator and the biggest propagandist of them all. So, therefore, in the right-wing mind, money goes with the best propaganda. So he asked me, how much money do you and you fellow liberal talk show hosts make? Which, in my opinion, is not germane to truth whatsoever. So let me go on and let me quote the thing. I feel like an Italian today. I'm talking with my hands. I don't know why. All by myself here in the studio. He says, how many listeners do you have? Well, you know, Lewis, and this is from Lewis, that's a trade secret, all right? What sponsors do you have, Mr. Guy James, Mr. Conspiracy Know-It-All James? You are a loser. I'm sorry I came to your show with an open mind, ready for a serious conversation. Let me interject once again. There was no real conversation, because although having the phone number to this program, I don't recall this gentleman calling here to challenge anything I said. Okay, let me go on here quoting here. And this has quickly precipitated into pure comedy. Well, Lewis, I'm glad you found it funny. I could sense the excitement in your voice when you finally got a call. This is the part I don't understand this letter. When you finally got a call and the subsequent disappointment when it is the guest you solicited. First of all, I did not solicit the congresswoman to be on the program yesterday. You see, they called me. They always do. All right? And secondly, I don't know where you would have picked up that I was disappointed that the congresswoman was calling because I knew she was going to call, okay? And let me go on with the letter. In response to your caller, I thought liberals didn't believe that increasing oil supplies would lower gas prices. Why do you support releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve when you also say that we can't drill our way out of it? Well, you see, Lewis, because we have dumped, and that's what we're talking about here, dumping oil onto the market, thus providing a momentary glut, though thus driving the problem, the price down a bit, okay? The drilling, you see, is by no means dumping any oil on the market because it's years and years away, okay? Can you understand that, Lewis? Can you understand that? It goes on to say, be quite an expert on oil here, evidently. It says, indeed, oil companies have leases already, but if they aren't drilling, that means there is no oil to be found. Oh, really? To heck you say, as they used to say down on the farm. If they're not drilling, that means there's no oil? And it goes on to say, if the oil companies lease land, explore, and don't find oil, they lose, L-O-O-S-E, all of the money that they spent. Well, that part is true. If they lease land and they don't find oil on it, they do lose money. But you see, Lewis, the way it works is these leases are cheap, really cheap, few bucks an acre for like a 10-year lease. And they don't go around the country just grabbing a map and throwing darts at it and say, here, we want a lease right here. They have a pretty good idea because of the geologists that work for these companies that supposedly with the high-tech stuff that they have nowadays have a fair idea because of past history and the technology that they have that there's a certain amount of oil under the land that they lease. You see, they start with that premise to begin with, Lewis. And Lewis goes on to say, furthermore, oil companies have no way of knowing if the land they lease has oil or not. Well, that is a fact that they don't know 100%, but believe me, Lewis, they don't go out and lease land, and I have experience with this. They don't go out and lease land unless they've got a damn good idea that there is some oil there. That's the way it is in the oil business. He goes on to say, you speak of the damage that oil exploration can do to the environment. Have you ever been to an oil field? Well, as a matter of fact, Lewis, I have. I have been to oil fields in around San Diego. I have been to oil fields in Texas. I've been to oil fields in Oklahoma. I've been to oil fields in Ohio. I've been to oil fields in Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Indiana. And I don't know if there are any more I've missed. Yes, there are some in Louisiana, but there and other states that I've missed. But I have been to oil fields in all of those states. Believe me, I have. I have the pictures to prove it. So he goes on to say, Lewis being the expert that he is, the technology is so advanced now that an oil company can go in, drill, and leave while leaving absolutely, and I'm quoting this, absolutely no footprint. Well, that is odd indeed, I think. That is really odd. I have in front of me a chart from the oil company folks, from the NRDC, and this chart here from the NRDC is an environmentalist group. It's about the Arctic Refuge land grab, how a 2,000-acre footprint, which doesn't sound nice, footprint, would bring 1.5 million acres of industrial sprawl in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And let me tell you how they come up with this 2,000 acres. Do you know that all of the pipeline combined that would go through there, they figured at a quarter of an acre? A quarter of an acre. That's not very doggone big, a quarter of an acre. And they figure all of the pipeline's going to fit on a quarter of an acre. You know why they figure that? Because the only part of the pipeline that they figure is the post sticking in the ground that holds up the pipeline. All right? You've got posts on each side of the pipeline. I don't know, what are they, 6 by 6 inch post steel holding up the pipeline? And so the only footprint that they count is the post sitting on the ground. They don't count the pipeline at all. They don't count the roads, the countless roads that are going through and the pipelines that are going through. They don't count any of that. The absolute truth is this 2,000 acre footprint that's going to be in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge turns out to be 1.5 million acres. Okay? And if you don't think there's a footprint, if you don't think there would be a footprint, tell that to the people in West Virginia right now. They're having the mountaintops blown up. Tell the people there that have had their land ravaged when the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured and they timbered and they tortured the land till the land was forsaken. Yes, that's coal. This is oil. Don't tell me any of these people are environmentalists, because they're not. Look at the lawsuit now. Still going on, Exxon Valdez. Look at how ExxonMobil trying to squeal out of the judgment that was against them. They tortured the timber and they stripped all the land. Tell that to the people in West Virginia. Tell it to the Love Canal folks. Tell it to the people that enjoyed the coast of Alaska where the Exxon Valdez was. Tell it to those people. No footprint. Goes on to say in this letter that George W. Bush is not friends with big oil CEOs. He was a small man, a small oil man, who was crushed by big oil. That was resolved 5 years ago. Well, now, I don't know what, if anything, was resolved 5 years ago about Junior Bush's relationship with big oil. I don't know about the actual CEOs. But since you mentioned that I ought to have substance behind what I say, I've given you substance on the footprint. Let me give you some substance on whether or not Junior Bush is friends with big oil. Two groups based in Austin, Texas. And by the way, if we're talking Junior Bush, we, don't you think, must include Richard Cheney in on this, since Richard Cheney really runs the government? And, of course, for purposes of discussion, we will include him in on this, okay? He was crushed by big oil. That was resolved 5 years ago. Well, I don't know anything about any resolution about Junior Bush being crushed by big oil that was resolved 5 years ago. I don't know anything about that. That would be 2003, 3 years after he was selected to be the president of the United States. But two groups based in Austin, Texas, for public justice, that's Texans for Public Justice, the TPJ, and Public Research Works, PRW, crunched the statistics on the wave of money on which George Bush sailed into the governor's mansion in Texas. It was what Andrew Wheat of TPJ calls something unheard of in Texas or anywhere else. $42 million on two campaigns. Grandfathered polluters poured $10.2 million into the campaign coffers between 1993 and 1998, led by what PRW calls the Dirty 30, including Exxon, Shell, Amoco, Enron, and Alcoa aluminum giant. Bush himself received $1.5 million from 55 grandfathered companies led by Enron, with a handsome $348,500 top-up from the man he called Kenny Boy Kenny Lay. Wheat's analysis of the new governor's personal time shows a revolving door for campaign donors and the energy industry. Andrew Barrett, Bush's in-house environmental policy advisor, began daily visits to the TNRCC in preparation for the appointment of new commissioners. Ralph Marquez, lobbyist for the Texas Chemical Council and former executive of the Monsanto chemical firm, and Barry McBee, attorney with the law firm Thompson & Knight, a major contributor to Bush funds, with a host of oil industry clients. Legislation ended up being based on the notion of self-regulation. That's what followed. A law enabling companies to audit their own pollution. And let's not forget the relationship between Mr. Cheney and Halliburton and their permanent ties to the United States, it would seem. They're a barnacle on the bottom of our boat. And let's not forget the Bush relationship with one Prince Bandar. Okay? You want an oil man? Let's talk about Prince Bandar. He's right up there at the top. And a walk through downtown Houston takes you past the headquarters of some of Mr. Bush's biggest campaign fund donors, the El Paso Corporation, which gave $750,000 to the Republican campaign, is now under investigation for manipulating the California power market. Mr. Bush has been proven to be very, very good friends with Big Oil. Very, very good friends. Now, as for more substance behind what I say, if that's what you desire, Lewis, and I don't want to spend so much time on one person, but it seems that Lewis represents the views of so many on the right, whom are so blind to the facts involved in this whole mess. Yes, the strategic oil reserves would lower the price of oil a little while. It's a dumping thing, like I said. And everybody's saying, let's drill, 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 as though the American public thinks gas is going to drop down to $1.50 a barrel if we're only allowed to drill, 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 and drill some more. Well, the Department of Energy came out with their projections a little less than a month ago. This is Junior Bush's Department of Energy, okay? A person that sits in his cabinet, okay, ahead of this department. All right? And their conclusion is, if Congress were to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling, crude oil prices would probably drop by an average of 75 cents a barrel. 75 cents. Wow, that's significant, isn't it? 75 cents. The report, and it's another one of those cases, be careful what you ask for. The report was requested in December by Senator Ted Stevens, thief in chief from Alaska, Republican who wanted that bridge to nowhere and is under investigation right now, one of the biggest thieves there ever was in politics. But he requested this, Senator Ted Stevens. By the way, I've been to his office in the Senate office building. He's got animal heads posted, mounted on the wall. Quite a treat he is. A real asshole, known to all of his compadres. But the report was requested by Senator Stevens, and it found that oil production in the refuge is not projected to have a large impact on world oil prices. Not projected. It's estimated that if Congress agreed to open Anwar this year, Alaskan oil could hit the market in about 10 years. I'm not saying, by any means, that maybe we won't need the oil in Anwar. But a good environmental way of extracting it's going to have to be done. But it is not the magic pill that the Republicans say it is. By no stretch of the imagination is it the magic pill. 75 cents a barrel. Well, and the thing is, this has become a political football, because the thing that high gas prices has done is to make people mad at the oil companies, first of all, and then when they got high enough to where it was really, really, really hurting the pocketbooks of everybody, the politicians have turned it around and now are anti-environmentalist because it's hurting the billfold. So that's what it's about. It's a political football. And one other thing I wanted to mention on this subject is, did you know that 1.6 million barrels of petroleum products are being exported from this country every day? 1.6 million barrels of petroleum product, a lot of diesel fuel included in that, being exported from the United States of America every day. Refined petroleum products. And that amount is up 33% from last year. So it seems we're exporting even more. The more serious that our energy problem has become, the more that we are exporting. This is some more substance behind what I'm saying. We had a caller last week saying, let's drill, 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 of course. He was repeating the Republican Limbaugh drug junkie mantra. Let's drill everywhere we can. And then he says, we'll just make the oil companies, this man who has criticized me for calling for the nationalization of the oil companies, has said, we will tell the oil companies that they have to sell it here in the U.S. Yeah, and he called me a socialist. Well, not in so many words, but that's what he meant. What makes anybody think that any of the oil companies in the United States will drill, drill, drill and not export that oil for the highest price they can get on the world market? What makes anybody even dream that any of the oil company, that ExxonMobil, would put the needs and the pressures of the United States ahead of any other country? What makes anybody think that ExxonMobil would do that? Are you kidding me? Does anybody really have a serious thought that if ExxonMobil and Chevron and all the other American oil companies, if the world market said $150 a barrel, that they would sell it for less in the United States? Are you out of your mind? There's people that actually suggest that to me, seriously. That the good and benevolent oil companies that care so much for the good old U.S. of A., that they'd give the people of this country a break? They haven't given us a break so far. What makes you think they ever would? That's poppycock. But that's just some more of the wild, crazy, wide-eyed views from the right wing. Have I said anything, Lewis, so far to address the substance behind my thoughts and my comments? Can you prove anything that I have said so far today to be wrong? Anything? I refer you again, once again, to the Department of Energy. 1.6 million barrels a day of refined U.S. petroleum products in the first 4 months of this year up 33% from last year. That represents 9%. 9% in this crunch time, 9% of total U.S. refining capacity of 17.6 million barrels a day when we're only running at 85% in the first place. Oh, we need more refineries! Oh, my God! Let's build more refineries! You know what? We aren't short on refineries at the moment. If we've got 1.6 million barrels of petroleum products to ship overseas right now, and that's 9% of our capacity, and we're only running at 85% in the first place, what does that tell you? Does that mean it's a refining problem? No, it is not a refining problem. I find it laughable when I see everybody jumping on this bandwagon of drill, 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 and I'm not denying that we may need to use all of the weapons available to us. We may need to do some drilling. We may need, and of course not we may, we must work on alternative energies. We must. We must pour money, more money into the research of wind power and maybe nuclear power. I don't know. But we must plan on the future, and we must do a better job of it, and we must not be pushed into this by the oil companies. We must not be. So let me continue on with this letter from Lewis. He said, "You think you are informing the electorate, eh? Nobody listens to you, except me, apparently, and I probably won't ever listen again. I'll bet you what. I'll bet she's listening right now." Said, "I don't think you realize how insane and delusional liberals are. Good luck with your miserable, meaningless life. I dare you to read this on the air as an example of how evil and heartless conservatives are. Luckily, nobody cares what you think. Signed, Lewis." Well, Lewis, I didn't read this in order to make an example of how evil and heartless conservatives are. I read this to make an example of how absolutely stupid a lot of liberals are, a lot of conservatives are. That's why I read it. It's taken for granted that evil and heartless are two words that we use and fit are quite appropriate. But the stupidity is what I wanted to point out. And I think after giving you a basis in fact for substance behind what I said, I don't think I have to say a lot more. But I replied to Lewis's letter and told him a few things, and he says, "Thank you for replying to my message. I listened to your show for no more than a half hour, and I didn't have to listen too long to hear what I've always been told a liberal talk show contains. It's not a matter of proving anything you said wrong." Really? That's odd. Because I challenged him to prove anything I said was wrong. He said, "It's not a matter of proving anything you said was wrong. It's a matter of finding substance behind anything you said." Well, Lewis, I've just given you substance behind everything I said. Everything I said. He said, "Indeed, I heard nothing that could be proven wrong, but it can't be proven correct either." Well, I just have given you all the examples you should need to prove it correct. And he also mentioned that, what the hell do you know about the oil business? What do you know about anything? And I wrote back and told him that I had indeed worked in the oil business, as had my father. And I do know quite a little bit about it. And I have been in the oil fields, and I have worked in the oil fields. And I do know what I'm talking about. And he writes back and says, "The statement is called an ad hominem variant." I wrote and told him, I said, "Oh, and another thing, I once worked in the oil industry, and you wouldn't be able to lecture me on that subject." And he writes back and says, "This statement is called an ad hominem variant, By stating that you worked in the oil industry, you're hoping that I am automatically going to assume that you're an expert in petroleum economics because you have experience in the field. For all I know, you could have been a janitor at an Exxon station in 1983, certainly not qualified to discuss energy problems. If you had substance, you wouldn't need to use such insidious tactics to prove your point. Well, Lewis, as I've just pointed out, it's not an insidious tactic. It's the truth, my friend, and you'll have to digest that in whatever way that you can. He says, and I'll give him this, he said, I guarantee you, if you can shine light on the substance behind your liberal ideas, more people will listen, and the more people will adapt your point of view. I think he means adopt my point of view. Now, here's the killer part of this whole letter. I used to be a liberal, Lewis says. I used to hate Bush and believe that he was worse than Hitler. I used to believe in global warming. But then I grew up, and I began to use my brain and learned how to analyze facts. And as a result, I quickly learned the errors of my way. I am a conservative because I believe that the United States of America is the greatest nation in the world, and there is nothing that we Americans can't do if we put our ideas and ingenuity to work. Lewis, would you please tell me where that statement is consigned only to conservatives? Do you not believe that liberals feel the same way, that this is the greatest nation on earth, and we've done what we can and continue to do what we can to keep it the best nation on earth, to perhaps get it back to being the greatest nation on earth? Don't try and claim that territory for yourself. Talk about an insidious tactic. That's absurd. And so, back to the letter, he says, being conservative isn't about being religious or stopping progress. It isn't about stopping progress. Conservatives haven't had a new idea for progress in this country since the caveman began clubbing women and grabbing them by the hair and dragging them into their caves. Tell me any progress a Republican conservatives have given us since that time. Tell me any progress that the conservative movement stands for right now. Anything called progress. The Republican Party and the conservatives and the neocons all rolled into one group have found nothing, have done nothing but try and take us backward to the days of the Quakers, back to the days of the oil barons, back to the days of the robber barons. That's where they're taking us. Progress don't make me laugh. It's incomprehensible to me that anybody could use the word progress and conservative in the same sentence. That's just rich. That's just too good. And he goes on to say, and I'm about done with this, so I'm not going to bore you with it much more, but he said it's about believing that the human spirit and individual responsibility are the keys to happiness, to prosperity, and to progress, not blind dependency on government. Yeah. Tell it to the guy whose wife and kids are standing out in front of the house that they had yesterday with the furniture sitting out in front of it after he's lost his job and been evicted and doesn't know where to turn. Yes, individual responsibility, and pull yourself up by those bootstraps. By God, you don't need any help for anybody. And by the way, Lewis, I would ask you, if you are old enough, or when you get old enough, I'm sure you won't want to take advantage of Social Security, will you? Hell no. Tear up that check or send it back in or send it to some government agency. I know that you, being of personal responsibility and don't want any government interference in your life, you'll be happy to send the check back, won't you? Being a conservative, says, is about preserving the Constitution. Oh, what a poor time to say that. After they shredded it, took the Fourth Amendment and plucked it right out of there last week. Plucked it right out of there and backed this president who's destroyed the Constitution in every way he can and given himself more executive power. You mentioned to me about preserving the Constitution of the United States And he goes on to say, and not treating is it a massive roadblock for progress. Once again, he uses that word progress. Says, being a conservative is about believing that anything is possible and nothing unattainable. Well, there's a PS to this. As you know, as all of you know, if you listened to the program yesterday, I made a comment about Jesse Helms. I don't regret one thing I said about Jesse Helms. He was a hateful son of a bitch. He was a homophobe. He was a racist of the highest order, and he never apologized for one bit of it when he died, before he died. That's what I said. I didn't like Jesse Helms when he's alive, and I'm not going to be two-faced and say I liked him after he was dead. They say God rest his soul. I don't believe he will, but then I'm not God. I will not make that judgment. But he writes, allow me to respond with an equally atrocious joke. Well, first of all, Lewis, I wasn't joking. I meant every word I said about Jesse Helms, and let me tell you, I refrain from saying a lot more that I'd like to say about Jesse Helms and his kind. But he writes, allow me to respond with an equally atrocious joke. Liberalism causes brain damage. Just look at Ted Kennedy. Well, Lewis, I think that's about as despicable as it gets. And as whenever I mention Ted Kennedy on this program, I always say, warts and all, personal frailties and all, which I recognize Ted Kennedy has, you will not ever find a racist bone in his body. You will not find a homophobic bone in his body. And you will not find any senator of the United States in the history of the United States that's done more for the working men and women and the sick and the elderly in this country than Ted Kennedy. And you can take that and put it in your pipe and smoke it, because if truth be told, everyone knows that that is true. That is all I have to say about Lewis. His letter was so much horseshit that I read it several times to decide whether or not it was actually not some kind of a ruse. And then I realized that it was not. I would say if this man really was a liberal at one time, that Limbaugh must have got a hold of him. Because nobody in their right mind could say he was a liberal and then spout the crap that was in this letter. You're either a fool or you're insane, one or the other, and I feel sorry for you in both counts. Well, I have rattled on quite enough here, don't you think? Probably time for a little break. And speaking of fools, Michelle Bachmann, Republican congresswoman from Minnesota, known for grabbing Bush's ass every time she gets around him and hanging all over him and getting all the pictures she can for Bush. This is a comment she made today, and I think she and Lewis would get along right well, don't you think?
So the American people can get back to paying $2 a gallon gasoline again.
You think
it's
that's
very
you think
possible?
That's even, you really think that's possible? You think that's
oh,
likely?
Sure. Oh, sure, it's possible. We are the Saudi Arabia of oil, the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, of coal, of wind, of solar, of all of the above. That's the great news. Our problem is not a famine of energy. It's a lack of will right now in the Democrat-controlled Congress.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
Are you a conservative Republican who believes George W. Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says, we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all that, then you'll certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and social security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous fighting words, bring 'em on. Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
Back with the Guy James Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. As I mentioned, another cloudy, rainy afternoon here in Southwest Florida, but the ground will drink up all that wonderful water and we'll have enough to last us a little while longer here. Sorry to bore you for so long about that letter, but you know, I get so many of those. And they send these big, long diatribes, and I don't have time to sit down and write back and counter every charge they make. So I thought I would just grab a whole bunch of them. And that letter and what I said in there not only goes for Lewis, it goes for many, many, many people of his ilk who come up with the same things over and over and over again. And I'm tired of it. So I thought I'd take a few minutes and address them all at once. It takes too long to sit down, and they goad you into that, you know. Yeah, well, what about this? And then you find yourself in a email battle with people, and I don't have the time for that. And plus the other thing is, I don't suffer fools easily. I really don't. Many of them try to sound high and mighty. Some of them have pretty good verbal skills. But then after you correspond with them for a little while, then you find out really they must have their thesaurus pretty handy. I don't know. A couple more letters that I wanted to get out of the way, well, as long as we're talking about hate mail today, me and my worthless life and all that sort of thing here. I got a couple more here for you, and I'll just get those out of the way. I usually do this and call it a few minutes of Republican love. It turns out there's been a whole hour of Republican love to start out with. A guy says, I had to write, and he spelled right, R-I-G-H-T. I've listened to your horseshit show about a half dozen times now, and you've done nothing but throw insults at President Bush. Well, I would interject here, and this is from Carl. Carl, I say the nicest things I can about him. I keep asking if anybody can give me something positive that Junior's done for us, and I keep getting no answer. I wonder why that is. He goes on to say in this letter, you've called him every name in the book, and you are an un-American asshole who don't have a clue about nothing. An un-American asshole who don't have a clue about nothing. If President Bush was not leading our country right now, and believe me, this sentence here is a gem. You may want to take this down. If President Bush was not leading our country right now, we would be speaking Arabic. I think he means Arabic. And having the heads cut off of any of our people who wouldn't give up Jesus for Muhammad. Spelled M-O-O-H-A-M-E-D. He goes on to say, well, I would sacrifice my life for Jesus and for President Bush, too. But I don't have to, because President Bush is keeping us safe from those crazy Arabs whose idea of progress is kill Americans for fun. You said you wondered if your name was on the terrorist list? Well, you can depend on the fact that I'm going to turn your name in myself. If it acts like a terrorist and sounds like a terrorist, it is a terrorist. So you belong on the list, you un-American asshole. I'll mail your name in tonight. Well, Carl, I do have some flying to do pretty soon, and I'm afraid I'm going to be outed as a terrorist now since you're going to do this. So maybe I'm going to drive. Is it okay for terrorists to drive? And if they are looking for me on the roads, I'm driving a blue 1971 Vega, if any of you see me on the road. My good car is a 53 Chevy pickup. There's another letter, short one here, and it refers to something I've already covered here, but I don't want to shortchange Tammy here. Guy James, what a disgraceful thing to do to disparage the name of our beloved Senator Jesse Helms. He was a great man, and all who knew him loved him. How can you disrespect the dead? Well, Tammy, like I said to Lewis, since I never respected him when he was alive in the first place, I'm not about to change my tune and say anything good about him now. I'm sure all of his racist, homophobic friends who voted for him and knew him and loved him have got all kinds of great things to say about him, but I don't, and I never will. 866-546-5254. Hey, have you got a pen and pencil handy? You want to take down just a couple of short notes? And the only reason I want to mention this is, a lot of people saying there's manipulation going on in the oil market, and the president is saying that he can't do anything about it, and he bragged about his influence in the oil business when he was up for election, and how it would be good to have a couple men familiar with the oil business. That would be Mr. Dick Cheney and himself. When he was running for election, he was bragging about that. I did some checking. And during our last election cycle in 2006, stay with me on this, In August 21st of 2006, gas was $3.08 a gallon. That's August 21st of 2006. That's, 3 months before the election. $3.08 a gallon. August 28th of 2006, it went down to $3.01 a gallon. September 4th of 2006, it went down to $2.90 a gallon, then $2.79, then $2.67, then $2.54, and then $2.40. Late October, gas in the last election cycle got down to $2.41. It dropped 67 cents a gallon. And guess what? On election, the last time around, gas reached a low of that year of $2.39 a gallon. Now, is that a far-out coincidence that gas just happened to tumble all year long right up till Election Day? And when Election Day was over, it started right back up again. Is that a coincidence? That was the election cycle in 2006. Was that a coincidence? Gosh, I think it's really odd. Very odd that Election Day gas reached a low in 2006. Very, very odd. And a lot of it had to do with Goldman Sachs. They dumped more than $6 billion in gasoline future contracts then. You think the gas market can't be manipulated? Bush was supported wholeheartedly by the oil industry, and they've reaped $250 billion in profits. I wonder. I really do wonder. There's a lot to that story about how the prices were lowered and lowered and lowered. Speech was given by Dick Cheney in 1999 when he was the CEO of Halliburton. And a little bit of it says, I'm often asked why I left politics and went to Halliburton, and I explained that I reached the point where I was mean-spirited, short-tempered, and intolerant of those who disagreed with me, and they said, hell, you'd make a great CEO. So I went to Texas and joined the private sector. But I don't think Cheney ever took his eye off the ball there. He said, frankly, the focus in today's economy on globalization and emerging markets is old news to the oil industry. Ours are global companies investing outside the industrialized companies at the turn of the last century. People need to realize that the energy industry often represents the largest foreign investment in many parts of the world, and its interests, insights, and experience need to be considered. Oil is the only large industry whose leverage has not been all that effective in the political arena. And then Dick got himself chosen as Vice President of the United States, where he has helped the oil companies and energy companies more than probably any of us know. And I challenge everybody once again, why not make it public knowledge? Why not? Who was at the energy meetings? We are told by insiders that amongst the things discussed at the energy meetings, in which we know at least somebody from Enron was there, and we don't know how many other people, there's been speculation, that they talked about maps of Iraq and pipelines and such. God only knows. Hey, what a day it is on the market, as long as I'm talking about money. 267, the market went up today. The Dow up 267, and oil went down $4.14 a barrel. I bet you gas will be down, what, penny tomorrow? I don't know. Wow. Wall Street surges on oil and banks. Oil's gone down $10 a barrel in 2 days. Well, surely it will keep on going down. It's inevitable, huh, that it'll just keep dropping and dropping and dropping. Will we see another thing like I just mentioned? Will we see the gasoline go lower and lower and lower up till election time once again? I don't think they'd be able to pull off that ruse once again, but then who knows? They do know what they're dealing with. They're dealing with a lot of people like Lewis that we talked about, and Tammy and Carl that wrote the letters today. They're dealing with a lot of people like that. It is hard to believe that there are 51 million people like that in the country who cast their ballots last time around, but let's face it, there are 51 million of them. So they do know what they're dealing with, and they do know that by dropping gas 25, 50 cents or whatever they could stand, that they'd probably convince those folks who aren't all that well endowed in the cranium. They might convince those folks that just maybe this is a good thing for them to continue on with another third Bush term, because after all, they'd be dropping that gas price once again, huh? Okay. Well, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM, America's fourth largest company in annual sales, said Tuesday that it's making more deep cuts to survive a harsh economy. GM jobs have gone from 107,000 hourly jobs in 2004 to 74,000 today. Buyouts and early retirement incentives will slash even more of those, as some new workers are added at half the pay. The new cuts include selling off $4 to $7 billion in assets, slashing salaried jobs and benefits, and suspending the GM stock dividend. GM CEO Rick Wagoner called this an unprecedentedly difficult time. He said these cuts are necessary for GM's survival. An awful economy for U.S. workers, and now Working America's Karen Nussbaum says that 15 million workers have bad bosses on top of the bad economy.
The bad economy makes the problem even worse. A third of U.S. workers, or about 50 million people, feel pressure to stay with a bad boss because of the current economy.
Working America is holding its annual Bad Bosses contest to hear stories like one of last year's winners.
A help desk worker in a plant who was required to stay in a burning building to keep answering the help desk line while the building was burning down around him.
Organized labor has its first openly gay leader, Jesse Russell reports.
New York-based United Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten has been elected to succeed Edward McElroy as president of the American Federation of Teachers. The election makes Weingarten the first openly gay labor leader to be president of a national labor union. Weingarten served for 10 years as UFT head, and under her tenure, she negotiated a 43% increase in educator salaries and helped organize 28,000 home child care workers in New York City.
Are you a Walmart worker who wants to collectively bargain? Then you might need to move to China. While the world's largest retailer has a record of ferociously busting unions in the U.S., the company this week signed a collective bargaining agreement with the Shenyang City Trade Union. Walmart began agreeing to union representation in China in 2004, as long as the unions were associated with the Communist Party-run All China Federation of Trade Unions. The agreement provides an annual 8% pay increase, paid vacation, and overtime pay. The Chinese union said the agreement reflects Walmart's commitment to social responsibility.
Here is today's economic report. On a day of turbulent stock market news due to the housing crisis, a new study was released by Forbes showing it isn't bad everywhere. Houston is number one on the magazine's list of best cities to buy a home in, meaning home sales in the Texas city have increased by 6.6% since 2005. The number two city is Austin, with San Antonio in fifth and Dallas in fourth. Philadelphia and St. Louis are the only two non-Texas cities to fill out the top six spots.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the news and all the frivolity that they talked about there today. There is good news at the stock market, and so all of you get your portfolios out and check and see how well you did today. And once again, oil is down. I didn't look. Let me quickly check here and see where gold is today. I don't know. For some reason, I just got to know where gold is every day. Don't own a single solitary ounce of gold. But where are we here? Gold, gold, gold. Oh, went down $16 today. $9.62. Okay. 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phone and welcome Susan to the show. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys.
Glad to have you with us this afternoon.
I'm afraid I'm like you. The only gold I have is in my wedding band.
That's exactly what I'm looking at, yeah.
And just a couple real fast points. Your dear darling emailer, as that man has never been a liberal. He's got freeper written all over him.
I think you might be right. It might be a freeper, yeah.
And I did manage to think of something good to say about George Bush.
Well, now, you know, I've always said one good thing about him. What is your comment good about him?
It's less than a year till he's gone.
That's refreshing, isn't it?
Oh.
You know, that's refreshing. no matter who it is, that's refreshing. I've always said, when asked if there's anything good about him, I've always said he dresses well. I think he dresses quite nicely. Of course, if you're wearing $5,000 suits, is what I'm told, you can dress fairly well. But okay.
Yeah, I defy anybody to look bad that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good comment. He'll be gone, and I've got one of those calendars in my other office. It's a countdown calendar, and. Good Lord, what a day that's going to be. I'm not a drinker. Health conditions and all, I'm not really supposed to have any alcohol. But I'm really thinking that on January 20th of 2009, I might imbibe. I might get off the wagon or on the wagon or however it is supposed to be. I remember that Seinfeld episode when they're talking about whether it's on the wagon or off the wagon. But I think it'd be a good day for drinking. I might.
I've got a special bottle of sparkling cider.
Oh, cool!
Just for that.
Anybody know what day? What day is? What day of the week is the 20th of January this year? Does anybody know?
Not offhand. I don't have a calendar.
Yeah, I don't have one right in front of me either.
I do know that January 20th, that there's going to be dancing in the streets.
Oh, absolutely. I think I'll grab my thing. And let's face it, and I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, the way the polls and the way the national trends look. We are going to be looking at a gentleman by the name of Barack Obama raising his hand that day and take the oath. And no matter how you feel about Barack Obama, it's going to be a much better situation than we have now. I think we all know that. But I think I will grab my American flag and just walk out on the corner and stand there and wave it. It's on a Tuesday, I'm told. Thank you, Mathal, on the chat room. A Tuesday. So maybe we can make a long weekend of it. Maybe we can take, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and maybe even have it spill over into Wednesday. We'll have to organize a head-on radio network party for that day.
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. You know, the last time I was on a cruise, I voted early and went on a cruise. And I'll never forget, there were several bunches, a whole group of us went together, and my best friend and I sat down there and heard the news in the big dining room, and just sat there crying in each other's coffee in the morning. It was a horrible, horrible morning, a horrible day. Suffering, I tell you, suffering. I couldn't believe. You know, one time it happened and they stole the presidency. I still believe they did. One time, okay, freak thing happened. I just couldn't believe that people would reelect that man. And, you know, Susan, have you got any friends that will admit it? That say, geez, I'm really sorry for that I voted for him?
The only person I've ever known who was willing to admit to voting Republican was my father in the latter years of his life. And he and I had fights up one side and down the other because he voted for Reagan.
Mm.
And I told him, God help this country. And he eventually had to admit, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, Reagan. Mm. Speaking of Reagan, can I read you something real quick? I might have done this before on the program. I got a piece out of Ronald Reagan's diary that was dated May 17th, 1986. And this was from Ronald Reagan's personal diary. And I'll quote this. Quoting Ronald Reagan. A moment I've been dreading. George brought, and he's talking about Bush the First, George brought his ne'er-do-well son around this morning and asked me to find the kid a job. Not the political one who lives in Florida. The one who hangs around here all the time looking shiftless. This so-called kid is already almost 40 and has never had a real job. Maybe I'll call Kinsley over at the New Republic and see if they'll hire him as contributing editor or something. That looks like easy work. That's from Ronald Reagan's personal diary about the gentleman who now calls himself the President of the United States. I'd be mortified. But that's what Ronald Reagan thought of our esteemed leader.
Dear President. Yeah. And what Ronald Reagan thought of McCain. He
yeah.
didn't approve of him dumping his wife the way he did.
Okay. I've been had. I'm told that note is a hoax. All right, I'll have to.
It's a hoax.
I'm told it is, and I'll take that for granted because of who told me it is, and somebody that's never wrong. And so I've been had on that, and I will just say this. It certainly sounds like something Reagan could have or should have said, but if he didn't, I stand corrected. We always correct our mistakes on this show.
Yeah, the opinion Reagan and Nancy had of McCain over his breakup with his wife, Carol.
Oh, yes.
Left her for Cindy. His verifiable truth, they were not happy.
Not a pretty story. She ended up staying with the Meese family for a while, and then Nancy took her on as, gave her a job at the White House, and Carol McCain worked at the White House for quite a long time, I think, after that.
Yeah, the last I heard, getting a marriage license when you're still legally married to another woman is really tacky.
Yeah, I agree. It sure is. It certainly is. Oh, man. Yeah. Hey, Susan, thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Guy. You have a nice day now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my. I guess I already mentioned that... My, we're getting lots of calls today. I already mentioned that the bill, the Medicare bill, was Congress shoved it back in Bush's face, and thank God that they did. I'm really, really pleased that they did that. I got several comments to make about John McCain today, and we'll get at that in just a little bit. I see this mess with that Payne guy. He had to quit the Homeland Security group that he was with. He had to quit. Gee, I wonder why he had to quit. Wonder why they forced him out. Must be a lot to that story. Maybe they're just trying to cover it up. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Shoved it back in Bush's face.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
You're
on.
Oh. Okay, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
That thing that they said was a hoax about Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Well, Ronald Reagan Jr., I've heard him say things like that. He despises him.
Yeah, well, I know he wasn't all that popular with him, but I guess maybe somebody took some liberties with that. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. I've heard that before. I thought it was out of his book.
But I've been corrected by the Head On Radio Network chat room, and you know the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah, you're right, but I do know that I've heard him several times.
Well, my point is probably the greatest deliberative body in the world, if you want any information at all, is the Head On Radio Network chat room. I should always check with them first before I say anything.
Did you know that... our Congress here in Florida has voted for us to get the Progress Energy to get the nuclear power plants?
No, I didn't see that today. Was it just today?
Just today.
I
heard a little on the news about it.
Hard to keep up with those rascallions up in Tallahassee.
Yeah, I just happened to see a little bit of the news, and local news. And also saw Charlie Crist. He's over in... Europe, I think in Paris, but he was explaining about drilling off the coast on, you know, Florida, that everything would be very careful not to mess everything up, you know.
Right, right.
But anyhow, but I hate about that about the nuclear thing.
Well, it's going to be all out now. It's going to be let's do anything and everything, and they're going to shove it in the environmentalist faces for a while, and Greenpeace and all those organizations.
Yeah, I mean, what is the point? And this is a company that's supposed to be using alternative energy too.
Sure.
You know, I don't understand it.
I did see where our power company here with FPL. You have FPL where you live?
I have Tampa Electric.
Oh well, FPL. They're going to go to some alternative energy here to use as part of theirs. I can't remember what it is for sure.
Yeah.
Read the article, but I just can't remember everything anymore. I don't know why. Do you have that problem?
Well, I'll tell you, there's so much.
isn't that a fact?
A bunch of stuff, and I just said the heck with it. You know.
Yes. Yes.
You just can't keep up with all of it.
No.
I've hardly even listened to the political part at all.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah,
you know, I get upset.
I know. I do as well.
I hope that's good news you were telling about, but God bless Kucinich.
Yes. Yes. If that makes it on TV, those hearings make it on TV, that'll be as good a contribution as a congressman could
sure
possibly
will.
Make.
It sure will, and I'm going to be doggone sure I'm going to see those.
I'm very proud of Dennis Kucinich. I know Dennis Kucinich, and he's a great guy. He has his little eccentricities, but he's a terrific guy. Speaking of eccentricities, you mentioned that our esteemed governor here, Charlie Crist in Florida, and maybe others around the country don't know it. I assume most of them do, and I know you've heard
that Charlie's getting married.
Yeah, he's engaged.
Yeah, and I found that to be a bit unusual, and I noticed that some of the national news people on cable, when they said that, said it with a smirk on their face.
Uh-huh.
And I think you know why.
Uh-huh.
Because, as you know, the one of the gentlemen that, I don't know how far back, well, you go back quite a ways, Juanita, listening to the program, but we had one of his, the people he ran against on the program.
I remember that.
Yeah, a gentleman from Tampa, I believe. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, he was great.
He was running as an independent. We had him as a guest on the show, and he called, and, you know, they wanted to be on the show. And he said he wanted to be on the show because he wanted to tell everybody that Chris was gay and that nobody knew that. Well, it turns out that half of Florida already knew it. And he came on the show and said, well, sure, not that there's anything wrong with that, but Charlie's gay, and he ought to tell everybody. And now we see that Charlie's getting married to a woman.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's all I heard. I saw our picture and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope, and I wish him well. I hope he's not being disingenuous with us. If he's gay, I'd say he's gay and let everybody know. I'm straight. I let everybody know that, and Charlie should, you know, the other way around. So he's all.
Look what happens to the ones who don't.
Well, yeah.
Admit what they are.
Exactly right. What was the Congressman Foley over there?
Yeah.
If he'd come out and said, I mean, we got like Barney Frank in the Democratic side.
Barney
went for years. He finally said, "Hey, I'm gay." Is anybody said, "No, we don't care." So just be honest about it. That's all.
Yeah.
Trying to fool us.
But whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, Juanita, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Oh, you're welcome, and you have a good day.
Thanks. I'm having a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye. You know, really, when it comes down to it, this presidential campaign unfolds, there are some truths that I think are being neglected by Obama and McCain. And the corporate media is included in on that, and probably the entire political class. And I think there are probably three truths that I can detect so far that are being totally neglected. One is America no longer has the leverage, the infrastructure, and evidently the intellectual have to maintain a corporate empire through military and economic power. We're not going to be able to maintain that. We don't have the leverage, or we soon will not have the leverage, particularly the financial leverage, to just take over whatever we want to do in this world. And the second truth that I think everybody is totally abrogating is unless there's an accountability for this Bush administration's war crimes that they've committed since the 9/11, America's in grave danger, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. There has got to be, the Republicans are always talking about personal accountability. Let's have some accountability for the crimes committed by the Bush administration. This is no Scooter Libby deal right here. This is the lives of over 4,100 Americans. This is the lives of tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis. There has got to be some accountability. And so far, no one has taken responsibility for this disaster that's turned out to be the what should be named the Bush occupation of Iraq. That should be the official name of it. They conned the Congress, the House, and the Senate. They tried to con the UN. Most of Europe didn't believe them, and most of Europe was absolutely right. They insulted the Germans. They insulted the English. They insulted particularly the French, as usual, for not wanting to go along with this ill-gotten adventure of Junior Bush's. There have been war crimes, and they have been sanctioned by the very highest office in the land. So that is one of the political truths that's being totally ignored. That there has got to be some accountability by this Bush administration. And probably the third truth that I believe is being forgotten is that, And people better wake up to this fact, all you anti-union people. Our society doesn't have sufficient institutions anymore to safeguard the livelihoods of the people that go out and earn a wage in this new economy. The unions are about gone. And the media just has fallen down on the job so much. I don't know how many of you read that Frank Rich column in Sunday's New York Times. It was a fantastic article. Frank Rich is just the best. But the silence by the media is amazing. I mean, this Bush administration's torture regime has actually helped Al-Qaeda. It's helped them. You know, that's why it's always laughable when they say, well, there haven't been any attacks since 9/11. Bush has made us safer. Made us safer, my patoot. But we don't have enough guys like Frank Rich printing the truth. I guess what else can we expect from this bottom line corporate media establishment? Frank Rich is just pissing in the wind when it comes to that. And really, in this post-Cold War world that we're living in right now, other countries don't have to automatically suck up to the United States anymore. We've managed to alienate most of the civilized world, and we've managed to help our enemies build themselves up. And our financial and our banking system right now has become some sort of a brutal game with referees that aren't impartial. And McCain and Obama are debating whether to target tax cuts for the rich or the middle class. We really need an entirely new socioeconomic model. I mean, you watch McCain go out and speak, and does he really believe that a balanced budget and this jihad of his against pork barrel spending can be some sort of a magic elixir for the mess that we're in? Does he really believe that? I don't know. I'm not at all happy with the way things are going. I hope to God Barack Obama can come along and him and a good Democratic Congress can make things well again. I hope. 866-546-5254. I see Bushy Boy Bushy Boy himself today asserted executive privilege once again to protect the information that the House panel has subpoenaed on the leak of the CIA operative, Valerie Plame. A House committee chairman, meanwhile, held off on a contempt citation of Attorney General Michael Mukasey. This is a guy that not so long ago, whose appointment was confirmed by Democrats even. And so here he is back already, trying to get executive privilege. And so Henry Waxman, as a courtesy to the lawmakers that weren't present today, Henry, who's the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, he rejected Mukasey's suggestion that Vice President Dick Cheney's FBI interview on the subject should be protected by the privilege claim. And, he said, well, if the Vice President did nothing wrong, what's there to hide? Will they hold Mukasey in contempt? Yeah, right. We'll see. Much ado about nothing, once again, I suspect. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
First of all, that idiot Lewis and the other one with Jesse Helm. I sent you an email on this. This is a result of generations and generations of incestuous relationships and inbreeding. I've come down to that rationale.
Oh, yeah.
Keep in mind, it is tolerated in that part of the country.
Sure. Yeah, it is. It is.
If it's the only rationale I can think of. No sane person can think the way these people are thinking. Or someone who has all their faculties.
Yeah. Well, it seems that way to me. You know, I read things from then. it's fascinating. It really is. I read stuff like that from people, and I'm just shake my head. There's really no use in trying to argue with them because they will not listen. They just won't listen. Obviously, if he claims he was a liberal at one time, and you know, I do doubt that. Obviously, listen to somebody, most likely a Limbaugh or a Hannity or somebody like that. So I wouldn't say they're not capable of listening, but they just won't. They won't listen to reason. I've given up on personally trying to argue with them. I just try and have a little fun with them now and then, but it's impossible to get through.
I keep on thinking of the scenes. If you ever watched All in the Family when Archie and Lionel used to go at it. not Meathead, but Lionel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember Lionel.
I keep on thinking of those scenes over and over.
Lionel was so good at that, coming in. Well, boss, what do you think we ought to do, boss? And, you know, he had old Archie really gone. Archie didn't even know that Lionel was making an ass of him.
Yeah.
Didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
Man, that was.
Or one of my favorite all-time scenes is the scene in Blazing Saddles when they're working on the main gang. And, you know, this is what I'm down to do.
Yeah. you know, that was just on TV a week or so ago, and I got to see, like, yeah, that portion where the black sheriff and all, man, that was good. That is good stuff.
Oh, yeah. And this is what that's the only way I can make peace with myself now. Keep my sanity.
It's come to that.
Yeah.
At long last, it's come to that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I swear to you, when I hear stuff like that letter that you read, I feel like taking a sledgehammer to my lap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I
know.
Can't afford to get a new one.
And just think of how much that there is. And, you know, like I mentioned, there are 51 million people that voted, pulled the lever, and I got to think at least half of them think like that. So, I don't know. It's, on the one hand, it's very discouraging, and on the other hand, it's pretty funny. They are good for a laugh, but then again, when the laughs are over, you sit down and go, my God, they were serious.
It's like early today I hear, and, you know, again, I can understand, you know, the whole concept of feathering your nest.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Joe Scarborough. Cup of Joe in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he's over there grinding on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Oh, well, this is a socialist thing and how government interfered and that's why it failed. No. It's when government got their hands out of there is when it started failing. And it became more of a privatized.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was under a quasi-government agency, it ran like a Swiss watch.
Yep. But there was money to be made and there were the vultures waiting on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
There always are. You can count on. And you know, just imagine, if you will, and I've meant to bring this up. We've all seen where the market has gone this past month. Imagine if we'd allowed them to privatize Social Security.
Oh, God.
Where would we be when a crash comes? If a crash comes, and it kind of seems like it's coming now, but you have to look at the market right now and say, Mr. Bush, if we'd have done your privatization scheme and the privatization scheme, I might add, that John McCain wants to pull off, where would Social Security be right now? Scares me.
You know, it's like, well, one thing you can say, he did want a place in history.
Yeah.
George W., the worst possible president. You know, I don't think American people could get any dumber than this, but we'll see come November.
I hope. And I probably should talk about that a little bit coming up here, about the way things do look for. I've got some pretty good estimates and polls and so forth to talk about, and probably talk about them today. But I think things are looking up. Really do.
One of the things, like, I would say, because the thing is, you cannot come crashing down on the right-wing welfare with these think tanks. They're always going to be impressive on the Beltway. And that's where the money comes from. And that's where the ideologue comes from.
Sure.
Okay. But one thing I pray and hope Barack Obama does when he becomes, I'm trying to think positive, is cross the board, make it a, and use that executive order in all the public and private schools that civics class has to be redone.
Oh, yes. Yes, that would be so helpful.
Okay.
So
what
helpful.
What it is to become, be an American citizen, what are the rights, what are the whatever.
Yeah, because, you know, oftentimes immigrants nowadays that actually swear the oath, often that have to take the test, oftentimes they know a lot more about it than naturalized American-born people do.
I know too many people who are just apolitical, non-political, and they're all like, you know, but yet they're complaining about her.
Yeah.
And the one thing I agree with Nixon, you know, everything is political.
Yeah, it is. It is. Comes right down to it. You betcha it is.
Everything is political. And this is, and we need to have mandatory civics and mandatory economics. Because, you know, how corporations are run, how stock, and how people, regular everyday working people, can have some kind of empowerment in corporate America.
Indeed. Indeed.
You know, when a stock is issued, that's your voting share. Where most people, they take the prospectus and throw it away. And I know, yes, there are people in clunks and all that who owns controlling shares and all that stuff, and they pitch shares against one another. But still, you know, there's power in numbers.
We had, a couple of weeks ago? I don't remember for sure, but we had Michael Waldman is the gentleman's name that wrote that book, A Return to Common Sense and Seven Bold Ways to Revitalize Democracy. And he had mentioned exactly what you said. That was a big thing with him, the civics class. That was a big thing in high school and in college, in current events. You had to stay up on it. And I couldn't agree more. I saw him on CNN the other night. He's been making the rounds. He was a good guest, by the way. And do take a look at that book. Kevin, I'm going to take a break here. If you'll hold on while I take the break on the phone, I will get your address and I will send you this book.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, and let's do that right now. Kevin's a good listener, and let me see here. I get to call the technology up here for a minute, and I will just hang on for 1 minute, Kevin, and I'll be right back with you. Let's take a break right now, and we'll be right back.
I had a dream, a song to sing, to help me cope. If you see the wonder of a fairy tale, you can take the future, even if you fail. I believe in angels, something good in everything I see. I believe. Pushing through the darkness.
back with you here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I lost Kevin on the phone there during that break, but he called back, and we're going to be shipping that book off to him forthwith. Michael Waldman's A Return to Common Sense, a great book. And Kevin, enjoy, and thanks for listening, and thanks for being there. Thanks to all of you for being there on the Guy James Show. I do so enjoy your calls, and I do enjoy your emails, and love to hear have your input and hear what you have to say. After all, you are the folks that I'm speaking to. You are the folks that that we get together and we share our ideas, and I depend on a lot of you for to bounce ideas off of you and so forth. And I appreciate you being there. I really do. It's a two-way street, you know. You may enjoy listening to the program. I hope you do. I hope that's why you're here. And I very much enjoy having you there, knowing that you've been supportive of the program and that you're there and a loyal listener. That means a lot, and I want you to know that. And I also want you to know that I am absolutely 100% convinced that our audience is here on the Head On Radio Network is the best informed audience of any network in the country. Any network whatsoever, we have the most well-informed listeners here. I can tell that by the calls. I can tell that by the correspondence back and forth. We've got some real brains. We've got some real practical people. We've got some people that are funny. We've got all sides of it. And the Head On Radio Network, the chat room, if some of you are listening on iTunes or other places, which I know you are, join us over to the Head On Radio Network chat room. You got to just sign in for a minute. They don't ask you for any real personal information of any kind, and there's no solicitations involved or anything like that. Just sign up, get yourself a password, and join the folks in there. I'm looking there right now. We've got Bob Kincaid. Of course, Bob is the what shall I call him? I don't want to give him too much credit. I mean, because Bob's just a regular guy, so I'll call him the chief cook and bottle washer at the Head On Radio Network. I, on the other hand, am just the dishwasher, you know, one of those people. And we got Bob on there right now, the Cobwebs, ELO, Jersey, Lemon 314, Liberal Me, Matho, Ralphs, Rama, Suzanne, Trouble. Who goes around calling themselves Trouble? Well, Trouble does. So, anyway, thanks to all you folks for joining us here on the Head On Radio Network. I really do appreciate hearing from you, your calls and your email and your support. It means everything to all of us, to Peter, to Bob, to Mark, myself. We're just so glad you're there with us, and you'll never know how much we appreciate. 866-546-5254. You know, have you seen that old speech of Jimmy Carter's replayed lately? You remember when Jimmy Carter was sitting there with the fire behind him and sitting in the in the sweater and having the fireside chat with all of us about energy back in the 70s? And that speech looks pretty damn good right now. If you go back and look at that whole speech, that speech now looks absolutely brilliant. Say what you will about Jimmy Carter. He was absolutely on the money. On the money. About the energy crisis that would be coming. And here we are. And he came up with all sorts of ideas and initiatives and subsidies and all that for alternative energy. And the next year, after he got out of office, the Republicans, they scammed the American people, who evidently are always more than willing to be scammed. They scammed them into thinking that their biggest problem was a lack of national pride and Soviet communism once again. And to hell with all the initiatives about the alternative energy. Just threw that by the side of the road. Turns out that Ronnie Reagan was say, hey, forget all that energy crap. We don't care. So, didn't work out so well now, did it? Well, I was going to talk about McCain's plan to continue giving giveaways to big oil. I don't know. Don't know if I even want to get started in on that today. It's rather disconcerting when you read what McCain wants to do for big oil. We'll talk a lot tomorrow about John McCain. I'll probably mention him a time or two yet today, but let's do look at the politics of the thing right now. Let's take a look at it. So far so good. And our folks over at the Liberal Journal sent over some stats for us to take a look at, and they look good. And I know a lot of people are upset with Barack Obama, including myself right now, and I hope he can make things right and smooth it all over. I don't know. We shall see. But I'm voting for Barack Obama. And a lot of people have said that the centrist shift hasn't worked. Well, let's take a look at the latest stats here. He's up in Michigan by 8 points. This is electoralvote.com, their polls. He's up in Michigan by 8 points. That's a potential swing blue state. He's up by double digits in Iowa. That's a purple state. He's up in Montana, which is a true red state. He's up in Virginia by a nose, which is a purple state. He's about tied in Missouri. That's even. That's another purple state. He's up in purple Indiana and purple Ohio and blue Pennsylvania by a nose. He's up in Colorado. He's up in New Mexico. He's tied in North Dakota. He's only four down in South Dakota, which is redder than red, and he's only down six in South Carolina, which is redder than red. And here's the kicker. If the election were held today, Obama would beat McCain in the Electoral College 320 to 204 with 14 ties. 320 to 204. And I think that's pretty big. I think that's huge. He would win 320 to 204. And looking around at some of the states here, by the way, you can find this at electoral-vote.com. They've got a great map there and got it all figured out for you. But Missouri, or Missouri, depending on which half of the state you live in, it's pretty neutral. They don't know what they know. That's the only, well, that and North Dakota on the map are the only two that they figured dead even. They don't know which way they're going to go. The rest of the states are all shaded one way or another. Of course, you've got California and Minnesota and Iowa and Wisconsin and Illinois and New York and Maine and Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, and Washington, D.C., all in the blue column. And in the red column, the usual suspects, we got Idaho, and the reddest of them all, Utah. Arizona, right now, is in the red column. We shall see before that's all over. Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky, the red states. Ones that are leaning red are Nevada, and that's really in South Dakota. Those are the only leaners, and Alaska, the only leaners. I forgot to include Hawaii in the blue states. And then you've got other states that are leaning blue, Washington, Montana, New Mexico, Michigan. And then barely blue, Colorado, Oregon, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. Anyway, it looks damn good. And they're also predicting 55 in the Senate. That's we're not going to get to where we wanted to be in the Senate, I don't think. 55, 56, I can't see any more than 56 in the Senate. I really can't. I wish I could predict more than that, but I just can't looking at the Senate races. So, all in all, and the political situation here, right now, if the election were to be held today, we would be swearing in President Barack Obama on January 20th, 2009. And hopefully these maps will continue to look this way. And again, take a look at that website. It's a good one. Electoral-vote.com. For those of you who are real political aficionados like myself, I think you'll really enjoy enjoy that site. Where did we else? We had a couple other polls here I want to look at, but I guess I really don't need to right now. No. Okay. And tomorrow, first of all, we're going to have our good friend Debbie Metke on, and she's going to have a lot to say about things that taking place up in the Milwaukee area, and there's some political things that you'll enjoy. I know you will. That interview is going to come up around 3:20 tomorrow, so we'll look forward to that. And I was going to talk about horizontal. I'm in a position of not having enough time to talk about some of the things that I wanted to speak to today, but that'll be all right, I guess. This continuing mess with this Payne fellow for McCain for the Bush administration, it's gonna spell trouble for the Republicans. A GOP lobbyist and fundraiser with close ties to the White House has quit a Homeland Security Department advisory committee following allegations of influence peddling and quid pro quo donations to the Bush Presidential Library. Department spokeswoman Laura Kaner confirmed to United Press International that Stephen Payne was asked to resign after being surreptitiously videotaped by a Bush newspaper, apparently by a British newspaper, apparently offering to arrange meetings with senior administration officials in return for a six-figure fee, including a $250,000 donation to the Bush Library. The department asked him to step down. And this news comes as questions are beginning to emerge about whether Payne properly disclosed his work on behalf of a number of foreign entities as required by federal law. Do they ever quit? God. It's just, you wonder why America seems to hate Washington, D.C. a lot of times. And in some ways, it's such a wonderful town. And in some ways, it is a cesspool. And that's one of the cesspool reasons right there, sorry to say. How many of you read Hullabaloo and Digby? I try to never miss Digby. This on her site today. It says that McCain is quite the jokester. The blog Rum, Romanism, and Rebellion pulls out a 1986 Tucson Citizens article recounting a joke about rape told by Senator John McCain speaking to the National League of Cities and Towns in Washington, D.C. McCain allegedly said, This is the man running for president of the United States right now. Did you hear the one about the woman who's attacked on the street by a gorilla, beaten senseless, raped repeatedly, and left to die? When she finally regains consciousness and tries to speak, her doctor leans over to hear her sigh contently and to feebly ask, "Where is that marvelous ape?" McCain was swiftly criticized by women's group. A spokesman for NOW in Arizona said the organization's members were incensed by his cruel and sexist remark. McCain said he did not recall telling the joke. Funny how he never recalls a lot of these things. Is that really even a joke? Digby says. Like his Texas fundraiser, Clayton Williams, maybe he just thinks that rape is something all women should enjoy. McCain didn't exactly learn his lesson from that earlier flap. He went on to tell that truly crude and stupid Chelsea Clinton and Janet Reno joke just this year. He brought out big laughs with another sexist gem. Republican presidential candidate John McCain took one look at a nursing school's training mannequin and asked if the dummy's name was Hillary. Campaigning at the University of South Carolina Upstate Nursing School, McCain couldn't resist a swipe at Democratic front runner Hillary Rodham Clinton during this campaign. "I was very glad to meet the dummy named Hillary," McCain said to laughter after a tour of the school. "Is that the name?" It wasn't. The dummy or human simulator doesn't have a name. "I know this kind of joking is fairly typical of frat houses and locker rooms and other all-male enclaves, but you'd think that a professional politician would understand that it's unacceptable to make these sorts of jokes in public. Even in 1986, that gorilla joke, even if it were funny, would have been out of line. But McCain has always been handled with kid gloves by the press, and so even when he calls his wife a cunt in front of reporters, they don't write about it. and I suspect that these sexist bon mots are among the comments the boys on the Straight Talk Express have admittedly withheld from the voters over the years to protect him. It's all in good fun, right? Except what kind of a politician says stuff like this in public in the first place? It's ridiculous. He's a 71-year-old man who can't seem to control the things that come out of his mouth half the time. And when he said this in 1986, he was a tender 49. I suppose he's been coddled by the machismo worshippers for so many years that he honestly doesn't think he has to, and maybe he doesn't. But the Republicans had better keep their trap shut about civility and decency from now on, because their standard bearer is a disgusting pig. That from Digby over at Hullabaloo. As always, words of wisdom. One of the best, Digby is, no question about it. Well, here we are down toward the end of another program. I don't know where the time goes. We've got the Bush people or the McCain people talking about having a respectful campaign, and they've done everything they can so far not to have a respectful campaign. Before I started the show today, I was watching an article that I've already known about on TV, but there's a billboard in Florida. And I want to apologize to people from the other states. Just simply because it's in the state I live in. There's a billboard put up by a bunch of Republicans up around Orlando that says, "Don't vote Democrat," and got a picture of the Twin Towers burning on it. And it's one of the most disgusting displays of political hackery that I think I've ever seen. In my opinion, that billboard is obscene. And if I lived up that way, I think I'd probably find a way to destroy that billboard. I'm that incensed over it that somebody would do that. But we know once again, and it's no surprise, we've learned over and over and over again, that the Lee Atwater and the Karl Rove tactics will go on. They will go on this year, and they will intensify between now and November. I don't think there's any question about that. And this one of the worst displays of that I've seen. Again, it's a billboard that says, "Don't vote Democrat," and shows the Twin Towers burning. That is aimed right at the intellect of the average Republican voter, I guess. Because you would have to be, as in that old picture of the Freeber, a real moron, and a lot of you know what I mean by that, you'd have to be a real moron to take that at face value and go with it. Well, thanks for listening today. It's been a pleasure to be with you, as always. I do appreciate your listenership, and we'll have a lot more coming up tomorrow. And don't forget Mark coming up now, and Bob after that. And they will certainly have some pearls of wisdom for you today. I have no doubt of that. They always do. So, don't know where our closing music went here today.